Now the United Nations says Myanmar's army has carried out coordinated attacks to prevent Rohingya Muslims from returning to their homes.
The credible information collected also indicates that the Myanmar security forces purposely destroyed the property of the Rohingya population, scorched their dwellings and entire villages in northern Rakhine State, not only to drive the population out in droves, but also to prevent the fleeing Rohingya victims from returning to their homes.
Official added that Myanmar army stages, quote, brutal systematic attacks against the Rohingya. He also rejected Myanmar's claim that the violent crackdown is in response to Rohingya militant attacks. He said the army's, quote, clearance operations began before the attacks hit the region on August 25th. UN has described the violence as a textbook example of ethnic cleansing. And joining us now is Mr. Edward Corgan, international human rights lawyer, joining us out of London, Ontario. Hello, sir. Thanks for joining us back on the program. So we've spoken before about this. If this is textbook ethnic cleansing, why aren't we seeing textbook action as far as sanctions and some kind of military intrusion or involvement to stop the Burmese government?
Well, I think that's part of the problem. We're not really seeing this as action coming from the Burmese government or the government of Myanmar. What we're seeing is the military pursuing objectives to basically enrich themselves and sustain their own power. The military has 25% of the seats in the Myanmar legislature. You have also, they've got control over the military interior, you know, some of the key sort of military and safety and security ministries. And that's part of the constitution. The president or the person who's supposedly in charge, Suu Kyi, she sort of is the political figurehead, but she doesn't have control. And there's a lot of opposition, and the army's been successful in mobilizing the Burmese or the Myanmar population against this so-called Islamic threat. With Muslims only make up 4% of Myanmar's population, but the army is ethnically cleansing, destroying the properties, seizing the properties, and then what they're doing, they're selling this to multinational corporations to enrich themselves. And by making the Muslims the scapegoat with Islamophobia and stuff like that, they are enhancing their legitimacy within certain segments of the population itself. Now, interesting, the Myanmar government supposedly negotiated an agreement with Bangladesh for the orderly return of at least some of the refugees back into Rakhine province. But the army is not following that, so there's a breakdown between what the political agenda is of the government plus what the people who are on the ground fighting and enriching themselves and maintaining their own power base, which is, of course, the military. You also now have a very disturbing development. We have now seen some attacks from the Bangladesh army on these the refugees going into Bangladesh. So the Bangladeshis are trying to, you know, to push back and to punish the Rohingya Muslims for trying to get into Bangladesh for getting freedom away from the attacks of the Myanmar army and also Buddhist extremists. Okay, so now Bangladesh is responding actually in a similar way to prevent the Rohingya Muslims from going back in. So the army has one agenda, and they seem to be really in control, especially in Rakhine province and control of the military. And the government may be trying to work out some sort of a solution, but it's not being translated into the military, which has the real power in Myanmar. So this is the difficulty, okay? Now, the United States and Britain have actually imposed arms embargo against for sale of arms to Myanmar, but the Israelis are providing ample arms and other, you know, the fact that Britain and the United States hasn't taken stronger action is that a lot of their multinational corporations are profiting from this. They're getting access to territory that is resource rich and getting it, you know, through the military, but not dealing with the local population. So it's in that sense, it's a very complex matter and it's getting worse and worse. And the United Nations has not been able to solve the problem, even though they're making some steps towards that. Ultimately, I think, you know, it hasn't gone to the Security Council because I think they expect that the British and the Americans would veto any motion. But that would expose the British and the Americans for what they are, to be greedy people that just want to rape the resources of a country and don't really care about the indigenous population, which is basically how they operated around the world in many cases, unless you've got a strong government that's willing to protect its people. But they don't have that in Myanmar. But at least if they were to bring forward and it would force the British and the Americans to veto a resolution, it would sort of rip off the cover that, oh, we're concerned about this, we're going to stop it. But they, other than themselves saying that they're not going to sell arms to Myanmar, they're not taking any other strong concrete action. And of course, there's, a huge humanitarian crisis. There's now fear of cholera breaking out in the area. They talk about, $75 million desperately needed for food. And of course, Bangladesh is a very poor country. They're one of the poorest countries in the world. They don't have the resources or the infrastructure to support this problem. And quite frankly, the Indians and other countries, they don't want these refugees either. So there's, people have read that people say that the Rohingya Muslims in Myanmar are totally friendless, okay? Which there are some countries like Malaysia, Iran, other Turkey that have taken some steps and have put some money, but it's not enough. And the core problem is really the political problem with the army trying to maintain its power and its legitimacy and the struggle with the democratic movement. I think Suu Kyi probably would want to solve this. It certainly is a great embarrassment. People are removing awards that she's got. I think Oxford University is removing an award, and they're threatening to revoke her peace prize. All of these problems are there, so it is complex.
Let's continue this some other time. We're all out of time. I want to thank you for joining us and your valuable input one more time. Mr. Edward Corrigan joining us out of London, Ontario, Canada, international human rights lawyer.